The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Today I'm going to talk a little bit about a discourse of the Buddha that I find kind of inspiring in its simplicity. It's very repetitive, so in years past I just kind of glossed over it and didn't really read it carefully, but and now lately I find it very meaningful in its repetition and its simplicity. And the context for giving it is kind of how I'm feeling after a very full week of all kinds of input from this world around me. I did taught a 2-week retreat that ended last Sunday. A wonderful experience of being absorbed kind of in the world of Dharma. And in a sense, kind of came out of it into the wider world again to experience many things that are difficult and wonderful in this world of ours. And the big one that had a big impact on me was reading about and the COVID-19 situation in the United States and in the wider world. And also talking to people who work in hospitals and their experience there, what's happening there and around the hospital, and reading about these things. And it's so tragic how many people are dying and sick and impacted from the illness. But the tremendous strain on the hospital systems and hospitals in various states overflowing and people not being able to find hospitals that'll take them because they're all full. But I'm also struck by the tremendous fault lines of tension that exists in this country are exacerbated through this the whole COVID-19 crisis, and the level of animosity and hate in all directions that is being spread and acted on is kind of astounding for what is an illness, that illness in which many people are dying. At the beginning of the pandemic, there was a fair amount of discussion about superheroes, the medical first responders and hospitals and nurses and doctors and staff and who were not vaccinated and were kind of showing up to support and to help and try to offer medical care to people who were sick and dying of COVID. So doing it at their own risk, of their own life. And there's that still happening, and it's kind of frustrating for them that with the vaccine available that they still, they're probably vaccinated, most of them, but still it's dangerous for them and that they have to experience so much death. And some of these people in the hospital, doctors, nurses, chaplains, staff, are witnessing multiple deaths a day, and day after day, when they go to work. But also that there are some hospitals, there are demonstrations outside the hospitals where people are angry at the medical staff for treating COVID, for the whole divide between the anti-vax and the pro-vax people, and anti-vax people coming and denying there's even COVID. And I've read about the nurses who will take off their uniform and have no medical badges or uniforms at all if they go into stores, local stores, because if they do, people hate them. They get attacked, at least verbally, and they don't feel safe. I heard a story of people who are going to work to try to help people from dying from COVID who had to go through a gauntlet of protesters who were yelling and hating at them to do their medical care. So it felt so painful to read and know and learn about these experiences that are going on and so on so many fronts. And I wanted to, what do I say? How do I talk? I felt like I had to say something about it in a Dharma talk. And what do I say? And then there are other experiences during the week that are very much on my heart that also led me to, what do I say here? So I decided to talk about this particular discourse which I think many people would read and not find it inspiring, find it, soporifically repetitive and dull somehow. But I don't think that was the case when it was originally composed. It was composed in oral culture, and the repetition was part of the song, the rhythm. There was a rhythm, there was a tune, there was a lyricism to it. And the chanting it in unison in the monastic communities. It was kind of like a song which repeats its lines over and over again and has a kind of rhythm of way it affects the heart and washes through us and makes it, you know, these really great Dharma points are just washing through. And they couldn't write back then either. So if you wanted to have, remember something, you didn't write it down and then check it out later. You had to really memorize it. And so to memorize in this rhythmic kind of way of repeating the same kind of thing with slight switches, changes, was probably very effective in an oral culture, maybe not effective in a written one. So this text, the sutta, is number 114 in the Middle Link Discourses. And Sevitabha Sutta, the discourse on the word Sevitabha means the word seva. Some of you know seva is a kind of an Indic word that it means to serve or to help someone. There's an organization that Ram Dass started called Seva that is doing humanitarian work in India and other places. And so it's just this word, and the word means to serve. It also means to attend to. It also means to practice. And so I love this idea that the word means both, that somehow we practice in order to serve. It's a way of serving. One translation, the most common translation, translated as what should be cultivated. And but with cultivated, it misses the idea that that there's a kind of little bit of a devotional quality to it, of serving, of helping. What should we serve? What do we give ourselves to in a nice way? And it is practice, as it's talking about. So, and this teaching is the Buddha gives a very simple teaching, and then. Without any explanation. And then the Buddha's disciple, Sariputta, follows up with an explanation of what it means. The Buddha then approves of that and does a more simple teaching. Sariputta explains. And then the third round, same thing. At the end of which the Buddha says, to summarize it, if lay people listen to this and apply this in their lives, it'll be for their long-term happiness and welfare. It's interesting, he specifies lay people. And in a sense, it's a little bit like secular Buddhism. There's nothing about rebirth. There's nothing about all kinds of liberation. Anything that makes it more complicated or more kind of religious for some people. It's here are some things you can do that that is beneficial for you, how you can live your ordinary life if you pay attention to this. And nothing religiously really is asked of people. It's kind of secular practices that way. However, it also points to the heart of what of the Buddha's message and something very central to how he orients himself. And how the Buddha starts, he talks about what should be done and what should not be done, what one should serve and what one should not serve, what one should practice and what one should not practice. And then he goes through a list of things. So it's, there's this dichotomy that's put up there. And in that, we're always doing something, whether we're thinking or using our body for something or speaking in some way. What criteria do we use for what we do with our body, what we do with our speech, and also what we do with our mind and how we think? And don't just leave it to chance. Don't let it kind of go amok by itself. But have some presence of mind to notice what we're doing and then to make a choice between different things. What do we serve? And so the Buddha goes through, makes this list. He says, there is conduct of body that one should serve, and conduct of the body that one should not serve. There is conduct of voice, of speech, that one should serve, and conduct that one should not serve. There is conduct of mind that one should serve, and conduct of mind which should not serve. Then he goes on, says there are dispositions of mind that one should serve, dispositions of mind that one should not serve. There are perceptions. Here we are, kind of the conceptions of the world, conceptions of things that we should serve, and conceptions that we should not serve. There are views, opinions, stories of the world and ourselves that we should serve, and ones we should not serve. And then there are, this is an interesting one for many, how people struggle with Buddhist ideas. There are identities that we should serve and identities we should not serve. And this kind of way of thinking is kind of central to the Buddhist teaching, which means that it's avoiding of categorical teachings about what one should do, categorical teachings about what kind of views, perceptions, conceptions, dispositions, and even identities that one should have or shouldn't have. And some Buddhists have this categorical idea that you should have no identities. You should let go of all identities when you're practicing. But here the Buddha doesn't want to reject everything in some category or accept everything in some category. And he's always asking the question, looking at, well, there's some that you should, some way you should do it and some way you shouldn't do it. So that's all the Buddha says. And then his disciple Sariputta says, well, let me explain further. Buddha says, sure. And Sariputta says, if what you're doing is unwholesome, don't do it. If what you're serving is wholesome, keep doing it. If what your disposition is unwholesome, then don't do it. If it's wholesome, do it. If the identity that you're holding on to, you're living with, is unwholesome, and he explains it as unwholesome leading to affliction. It's unwholesome and it's harming you, don't do it. But if it's wholesome, leading to non-affliction, then it's fine to do it. So there's always, the evaluation for what to do and not to do is based on this idea of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, which sometimes is translated as skillfulness and not skillfulness, which is it points to the, it's consequential. It's considering in doing this, what are the consequences? If it's skillful consequence, beneficial consequences that are useful for you, then do it. If not, then don't do it. And so here there's an evaluation process that each person can do for themselves. These are not categorical teachings of anything about how to behave, about ethics, necessarily. It's a little more nuanced than that, but or about views, you know, and some people will not like this text because it's so dualistic, they'll say. What should be done and what shouldn't be done, there's two things that are standing in opposition. It's a binary, and like there's doesn't leave any other room for something. But that's a view. What about non-dualism? And the Buddha would say there is a way to serve non-dualism that's one should do, and a way of serving non-dualism one should not do. And how? If it's wholesome to do it, do it. If it's not wholesome, don't do it. And so having this kind of guide, this perspective, each person becomes their own teacher, their own guide, their own person finding our way forward. And because the word for skillful also can mean very close to the English word for ethical, it's how we become our own ethical guide. And it's being what's wholesome and unwholesome. And this is so crucial to the Buddhist teachings, that we would be have our own ability to recognize this quality of all the things that we're going to do in body, speech, and mind, and to track it. And so when it's unwholesome, it feels painful. It has an ouch in it. There's an ache, there's a contraction, there's tension, there's stress, there's a closing down. There's the unwholesome undermines the person who has it. So things like anger, hostility, delusion, greed are the primary representations of what's unwholesome that undermine the person who does it. The ancient language, they talk about these things, greed, hatred, and delusion, burn the person who has them. So they might be outwardly directed, wanting something or being hostile to someone else, but we're harming ourselves when we do it. So it isn't always so like major like the harm, but there's a feeling of tension, stress even sometimes. Something gets lost, some self-alienation. When things are done wholesomely, there's a whole other way of feeling. It doesn't feel deflating or diminishing or it doesn't have an ouch. It has more of an ah. It has more of a feeling of yes to it. There's a feeling of opening, of relaxing, of a delight or warmth, a feeling of wholesomeness. Not everyone associates in English the word wholesomeness to something that feels so good, but when I was a kid, the advertisements for bread talked about wholesome bread. That's my big association with the word. And these commercials on TV. And I think the idea was that it was nutritious. But more than nutritious, it was kind of felt, you know, comfortable, like maybe some food that we grew up with at home that a parent made that just felt like more than just tasty. It felt like the parent's love came with it and was so nourishing in a psychological way. It's kind of what I associate wholesome with. So we do things that have this beneficial effect. And for some people, this is a new idea that we could be tracking ourselves carefully with mindfulness and make simple choices away from what is unwholesome to what is wholesome, away from what has kind of not has an ouch, and towards what has an ah and is nourishing for us. Away from what is denourishing, unnourishing us, and that and to be sensitive to part of the purposes of mindfulness is to develop a heightened sensitivity to that very difference, so that we can choose to be nourished. And so it isn't just simply being mindful in the present moment and just that's enough of it, but it's doing being mindful in the present moment so we can make these simple choices as they're obvious of how to do something. And it could be as simple as how we make a meal. If we do it tense, in a hurry, resentful, if we do it afraid about, you know, will they like my food or not, that has a little bit of an ouch to it. But if we do it with an inspiration and joy and love and generosity as part of it, just delighted that we have people we can feed, that has a very different feeling for it, done from love. So to kind of track this, to know it, and then to kind of begin to know, kind of smell the direction, almost second nature, that's the way to go. To what's wholesome. And this is the way that hopefully we can find our way in a fractured society, a society that has a lot of tension in it and a lot of hatred in it and a lot of greed in it, that we don't want to contribute to that. We want to contribute not to the unwholesome, but to the wholesome. Unwholesomeness produces more unwholesomeness. is a teaching of the Buddha. Wholesomeness produces more wholesomeness for oneself and also into the world. So unfailingly, dedicatingly, committedly, living a life that's committed to the wholesome, the the beneficial, that which is nourishing, that which is inspiring, that which is for the greater welfare and happiness of all beings. We don't always know what that means like in terms of actual things in the world. Should we vote for a different kind of taxes or not? What kind of tax system should we have? What kind of electoral system should we have? And so all these big questions that are difficult to, you know, agree on, let alone really have answers for. But be very careful not to lose sight of the wholesome in discussing these. Don't sacrifice the wholesome because of views and stories and opinions. Remember what the Buddha said. There are some views that one should serve and some views one should not serve. And those views that are wholesome and have wholesome consequences, those should be served. But those which are unwholesome, not to be served. And it isn't just the views, but it's how we hold views, how we use views, how we speak of our views. There's a way of speaking about them and the way of not speaking about them. How do we know? Speak in a way that's wholesome. Don't speak in a way that's unwholesome. So it goes on and on. This idea of wholesome, and this way in the text, but that's, you get the general idea of it. And that's my, what I felt most felt inspired to talk about in the wake of so many challenges that exist in our society. And may it be that we are a wholesome, contribute to the wholesomeness of our society, the nourishment of our society, so that what is really good and beneficial for the welfare and happiness of every single person in our society, including the people who are so often forgotten and marginalized, or that we don't include in our hearts. Let us include everyone in our hearts, even the people we disagree with, so that our attitude towards them is wholesome, even if we disagree with them. So thank you all very much.